You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Kids 7 to 12 years of age are invited to sign up for the Cleveland Browns Youth Football Camp, where they'll work with top high school coaches in a three-day camp focused on passing, kicking, blocking, and defense on the field of First Energy Stadium. They'll also receive hands-on action with the new Browns rookies. Choose from two convenient sessions, June 8th through the 10th and June 15th through the 17th. That's when Matt Wilhelm's progeny will be there.
Yes.
Don't delay. Sign up your kids today at clevelandbrowns.com.
The baller.
Yes, the baller is there. Speaking of a baller, we have one of the great guests in the National Football League media joining us right now from ESPN NFL analyst Louis Riddick is on the Ohio Business Machine hotline. He was played safety in the NFL from 91 to 98, including a stint right here in Cleveland with the Browns, and has twice been director of pro personnel, once for the Skins, once for the Eagles as well. So he knows to play in the game. He knows the front office of the game, and now he's an on-air talent for ESPN as well. Louis, thank you so much for being with us.
Anytime, man. It's always great to talk to the people of Cleveland, who I might add, one of the best times I've had playing professional football. And I'm not saying that just because I'm on this radio station, because I love Cleveland, always have.
Well, that's good. We love to hear it. So help us, Louis. You're Ray Farmer. You're headed in this draft less than a week away. What do you see as the biggest needs, and where do you want to go early in this draft, whether it be positionally or specific players you target, say 12, 19, and 43?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously you got to start with quarterback. Look, I know that no one wants to throw in the towel on Johnny. And who knows what's going to happen with him. I think he just needs to show in the offseason here that he's got everything back in order, and then they can just take it from there, and the coaching staff can assess it from there. I don't know if it's something you can count on, though. And Josh McCown, great backup profile. He's not the quarterback that's going to lead the Browns back to where they need to get to. So I think the number one thing is there a way that they can get up if they view one of the top two quarterbacks as being someone that they can help them? Is that a play that they try to make? If it's not, then they're just going to live with who they've got. Then they better build up the weapons around the quarterback on offense, which means wide receiver has got to be something that's on their mind with that first pick at 12, if someone is down in there that they have valued properly. Because Dwayne Bowe and Brian Hartline, look, decent players.
Sure.
But, again, it's just not it's not what you're going to need to really have in order to match the firepower of other people in that division. Look at the other wide receivers that they face within that division. There should be some other players that are there, maybe even defensively. You know, they're going to have some holes to deal with on the defensive line, particularly at D tackle. A bunch of guys coming up being pending free agents in 2015 with Bill Taylor, Billy Wynn, you know, John Hughes. They need to fortify that. So does Danny Shelton slide down there to the 12th spot? Is he someone who you consider there? And, yeah, I mean, then at 19, depending upon what you do as far as moving up in the draft, if you felt like you needed a quarterback, you know, at 19, is there an outside pass rusher that would fall down in the draft? Does Shane Ray fall down? I mean, which is kind of ridiculous to me, but could Shane Ray be down in there where you just kind of look at a guy like that who could put some outside pressure on the passer for you, because you can never have enough rushers, especially in that defense? I mean, there's a multitude of different ways that this draft can go for the Browns, but you know, those are some of the positions I'd be thinking about.
Louis, let's talk quarterbacks for 1 second. In your evaluative process, would you compare, say, Johnny Manziel and Marcus Mariota as prospects head-to-head, number one? And number two, is Marcus Mariota, in your opinion, knowing that you just invested a first-rounder in Johnny, worth the package of early picks it would take if you're the Browns to move up and get him?
Well, how do they compare? I don't really think there is any comparison, because starting off the field, there were enough red flags. I shouldn't even say red flags. There was enough red flares going off over Johnny Manziel before the draft to know that, you know, this was something that would probably had a greater chance of happening than not happening. And the draft is all about risk management, especially when you're talking about the character of players to begin with, and especially when you're talking about the character of players at the quarterback position. Marcus Mariota's character is platinum. It's untouchable. There's nothing to make you worry about. Now, when you're talking about on the football field, Marcus Mariota has shown things in college, even though he ran a spread offense, so to speak, that Johnny Manziel never showed at Texas A&M. Marcus Mariota was being pigeonholed early in the draft process as being a guy who just threw to spots, threw to open wide receivers, and was a product of a system, which is just ignorant scouting in my viewpoint. You look at him and look at him on third down and look at Oregon's passing offense and watch Marcus execute the passing offense on third down. It looks in many ways similar to what people were doing at the pro level. People say, well, he doesn't read through progressions. He's only a half-field reader. That's total BS. Just watch his film and then reassess what you think about him. Is he worth moving up there? Well, they've got some pretty serious intel by some of the people on the inside there,
sure.
Namely the quarterback coach who knows him pretty well. That's up to them whether or not they feel as though he's worth it. But I don't think the two prospects compare whatsoever. Marcus Mariota blows Johnny Manziel out of the water.
Okay.
Lewis, as a former NFL personnel executive, take us inside the draft room and walk us through some of the types of things that might alter your draft board 6 days out or a week out as the draft vastly approaching. And also, too, why a guy like Vic Beasley or Todd Gurley may be jumping up or jumping down a draft board.
Well, I think, well, starting with Todd Gurley, really what alters draft boards is, at this point, is medical information that you uncover that is something that was a little bit unexpected, and then you get scared. And if you have a clump of players that are all similarly graded, and then some kind of medical information and or character information comes out about a guy that you uncover, that's how you wind up separating guys. That's how guys can move down a draft board. I mean, just think, like right now, I mean, doctors and trainers are really giving front office people the final pieces of the puzzle, so to speak, to really kind of put their draft board together and really slot guys where they want them to be. With a guy like Todd Gurley, it's kind of working just the opposite as far as his medical is concerned. He comes out of the combine rechecks. His knee looks great. His attitude is great. He's on track. So now people are much more comfortable looking at him a second time, and now he's rising up the draft board because people feel as though they can get their return on investment on a unique player much sooner than they may have thought originally. So that's how players start to move. That's how boards start to get jockeyed around and kind of adjusted at this point, because you're finding out that late medical and character information that may sway you one way or another.
Once the draft gets underway, does a draft board change? In other words, if the Browns take a receiver at 12 and then the best player on the board at 19 is a wide receiver again, do draft boards change on the fly, or your draft board is what it is? And secondly, when you put your draft board together, does it take into consideration the weaknesses of your roster, or it really is just grading out the players and putting the best players in order?
Well, do draft boards change on the fly? They shouldn't. Just a matter of what you're willing to pay for a player is what can happen, depending upon who's available there. So you don't really want to mess around. You don't mess around with the rankings of your board at that time. It's just whether or not you feel comfortable picking a player where you're slotted to pick, or do you need to move down and just say, hey, look, there's no one here right now based upon our board, so we try and get out of here, move down, and pick a player at the price we want to pick them. Obtaining value is really what everyone ideally wants to do. So you don't want to pay too high of a price for someone. You don't want to reach for people ideally. Sometimes you're forced, if you don't have somebody you can work with and you have to pick a player, then you just make the best pick that you possibly can in that type of situation. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you just really need to be as fluent and as adaptable as possible, because things can change, but you just don't want to be messing with things too often. Now, what was the second part of your question there?
Second part of the question is, when you're putting together a draft board,
yeah,
do you take into consideration the weakness on your roster, or do you really just grade the players as you see them?
Well, you try to just grade the players for the league, so to speak, and really just try and put values on players as the league sees them, so you kind of know where they will come off. But the reality is, when you're putting together your board, I mean, you're trying to build a team now. You're not just trying to collect talent, you know, arbitrarily and just throw together a team and have 15 first-round tackles on your team, you know, in an extreme example, and not pay attention to what you need. So the reality is, of course, you wind up moving players and maybe subconsciously grading players in such a way that they happen to be, ironically, the best player on the board when it comes time for you to pick, because it's a position you need, and you just kind of like fool yourself into thinking, or rather fool yourself into stacking your board in such a way that it's justifiable when you pick at that point. I mean, I've been in enough draft meetings and draft rooms to know that that's what we've done because the need was so great, although you want to try and not, you don't want to try and do that to yourself. And, look, again, it's not a perfect science. It is a team-building exercise, and anyone who tells you that they don't draft for need at all is probably lying to you.
Who is the best draft room decision maker you were ever with?
Well, I would say really the guys who were real calm about it and who were confident about it. One of the interesting things really is Andy Reid was very calm about how he approached the draft. I mean, I thought he was very smooth on the phone, was very practical about players and where he thought we should move up and down in order to get them. I think he was someone that, even though at that point in time you wanted to be quiet, you wanted to be calm, cool, and collected, and it really comes down to just a few people really pulling the trigger, I think he was someone, when you had time, believe it or not, if there were other scouts in the room, which there were early on when I was in Philadelphia, and then that was kind of done away with once other people got in control, he would come back and ask you, hey, what do you feel about this guy? Do you have anything to add on this player? I mean, he was very much so inclusive and was very cool and very confident in the picks that he made. They didn't all work out, but a whole hell of a lot of them did. So he was someone who was fun to watch, just how laid back he was during that day.
From being in that kind of a room, what kind of a leap in year two do you think Ray Farmer can make? Because last year he didn't even have a full year as a GM. He kind of took over after the season, and now he's had that full year. He's put his team in place. How valuable is that for a general manager?
Well, sure, once you've been through the fire once, as far as getting to a whole calendar year of I'm sorry about that. It's my home phone.
That's all right.
Once you've been through a whole calendar year of being able to get through all the different things that can happen, to you as a general manager, the next time around is much more comfortable. You kind of do have a game plan. You kind of do know what to expect. And even for seasoned GMs, once game day rolls around for you, which is the draft, the heart gets going, the adrenaline starts pumping, and things can change so fast that even you still may find yourself a little bit nervous and not always doing things the exact same way, but there's no substitute for experience whatsoever.
Lewis, I want to ask you about one player in particular who's been linked to the Browns all draft process long, and that's Danny Shelton. Now, at first, it seemed like he wouldn't get out of the top five. Now it seems that he could be there for the Browns at 12, maybe later than that. Bill Polian says he's not worthy of a pick that early as a two-down player, doesn't think he's special, doesn't like the 40 time he ran. What is your take on Danny Shelton, and if he does come to the Browns, what does he mean for this 3-4 defense?
Yeah, that's interesting because, we just had a mock draft special last night on the ESPN
right,
where Bill was talking about that. Yeah, I know people, Chuck Smith, who's a former teammate of mine with the Atlanta Falcons, worked with Danny Shelton as far as getting him ready for the draft and getting him ready for the pros. And he told me point blank, that Danny Shelton is going to surprise people with how explosive this guy is, not just as a run defender, which is unquestioned
right,
as far as when you watch the film, but as a pass rusher. He thinks Danny Shelton is a guy who will be every bit of a third down player, and said, look, I know people like Haloti Ngata, but this kid's going to be just as good as Haloti Ngata.
Now that's strong. All right, let's get him to Cleveland. Let's go.
He said, hey, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled in any way by the 40 time. We understand that it kind of doesn't look good, but he'll be just fine.
I can't let you go without asking you for one good Bill Belichick story.
Oh, geez, there's a bunch of them. Well, I'll tell you this. When we played in the playoffs in 1995, well, January 1, 95, that's in the 94 season, I got to start against the New England Patriots that game, that wild card game, and had like 10 tackles and interception, a couple big hits, because Stevon Moore, one of our safeties at the time, had been hurt. Well, going into the Monday meeting, I'm thinking I'm going to get the game ball easily here. Bill tosses it to the late Eric Turner, who was one of my best friends ever. And I was crushed. I'm sitting there going, man, what do I have to do to get a game ball around here? Eric Turner turns to me, and he looks at Bill in the team meeting over there in Berea, and looks at me, and he goes, no, man, this is Lewis's ball, and tosses it to me. And everybody starts clapping, yeah, congratulations. Well, we break up the team meeting. As I'm walking down the steps to leave, Bill grabs me, looks at me, and goes, let's just see if you can do it again next week. And that's it. And that was it. And I was like, dang, okay, well, thanks.
Yeah. At least you got to keep the ball.
That's right. But see, that's how he was. He was about, don't do it for me 1 week. Don't do it for me 2 weeks. Just do it for me consistently. He hated roller coaster players that were up and down. So for him, it was like no big deal. Even though it was a playoff game, it was one of the first playoff games Cleveland had won in quite a while. So to him, he didn't care.
I think it was the last one we won also, Lewis.
Yeah, I know.
We were going to try to gloss that over, kid. Relax.
Yeah.
Lewis, thanks so much. Great stuff. You can catch him, obviously, on ESPN. Always on there bringing very, very good information. He'll be a co-host for ESPN Radio's NFL Draft coverage next week. Lewis, thanks so much for your time.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, take care. Lewis Riddick joining us. Still to come, Matt Miller from the Bleacher Report. We've got the Friday forecast. We got your calls, 216-578-0850. Big edition here of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.